Hello, Night People. This is Gibb. Tonight we continue our week-long look at the Second Vatican Council. Standing by in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, is Bishop Fred P. Corson, Methodist bishop residing in Philadelphia and president of the 50-million-member World Methodist Council. Bishop Corson has been an observer at the Second Vatican Council and has had private papal audiences with Popes John and Paul. If you'd like to ask Bishop Corson a question on tonight's topic, effects of the Second Vatican Council on Protestantism in the U.S., or make a comment on the Council, give us a call here at Night Call. Now, our Night Call operators are on duty, our Night Call lines are open, and we invite you to join us here. Our Night Call number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Please make that call station to station. Our Night Call number again is area code 313-846-6601. We invite you to join us here on Night Call. Our topic tonight, the effects of the Second Vatican Council on Protestantism in the U.S. Bishop Corson, what has the Second Vatican Council accomplished?
Well, of course, it's done a great deal, and some of it hasn't gotten very wide publicity, but I think the votes that have been taken up to date, there have been six very significant decisions made. One of them, of course, was the decision regarding religious liberty, in which the council stated that a man had a right to worship God according to the dictates of his own conscience, and that this should not in any way be hampered so long as he observed the laws of the land in practicing his religion. And while we in the United States will not feel much difference because of that in many countries of the world, it will mean a great change in the attitude which the Catholic Church has taken toward other religious bodies. I think religious liberty in that sense.
Would this be in Spain and Colombia?
Well, of course, in Spain you would have a quite a marked difference, because there just recently practice of other religions has been banned in a public way, and now, of course, under this pronouncement of the Second Vatican Council, we will expect to see a much freer expression of religion, especially the Protestant religion, in various parts of Spain. Already the distribution of the Bible has been allowed, and the open public worship, which has been banned, I think will be restored under the direction, of course, of the laws of the Spanish government. But Spain and in South America, too, there will be great changes there.
But not too great changes as far as the relationship between Catholics and Protestants in the United States, then?
Well, I wouldn't think so, because we have here, by our tradition and by the laws of our land, freedom to worship God according to dictates of our own conscience, and that has been established by the state, you see. But in the countries where the Roman Catholic Church has been very influential and in many places dominated the state, this will make a great change.
Bishop, you mentioned the Catholic Church accepting a common Bible, or that we have a common Bible now. Will this affect the relationship between the...
Well, yes, this should very greatly help our whole movement toward the spirit of unity, at least, because heretofore, you see, the Roman Catholics were not permitted to use our Protestant Bible. They had their own Bible, the Douay Bible, as it was called. And there were structural changes somewhat. I think really no basic doctrinal change between the two Bibles. But now the Revised Standard Version has already been issued with the consent of the Roman Catholic Church and the approval of the Roman Catholic Church. The Old Testament is now in the process of being brought out by both Roman Catholics and Protestants, so that from now on, at least, we will have a common Bible that can be read as freely by the Roman Catholics as it is by the Protestants. And I think that is really a great step toward a sense of unity, the basic oneness of all of us as members of the Christian family.
Will the American Catholic now have a greater say in his church?
Well, I presume that that will be so, although the pronouncement relative to the laity, the apostolate of the laity, as they call it, has not yet been voted upon. But increasingly and inevitably, I think it will be true that the layman will have a larger part in not only the work of the church, but likewise the direction of the church.
Bishop Corson, do you feel that there's any difference in the understanding of the word laity as used by a member of a Catholic church and a member of a Protestant church?
I would say that basically there ought not to be any difference in the use of the word laity. That is to say, the word itself means a separation from the clergy, that is, and in the Roman Catholic Church, the clergy and the hierarchy really have constituted the church so far as the government of the church is concerned. I do think, however, that the Second Vatican Council will bring out in clear substance the sense of the divine call and commission of a layman to serve God in the ways in which he is directed. So often we Protestants are much concerned about getting a program of action, of activity for our laymen. Now, of course, that's essential and necessary, and it will be a part of the new relationship of the Roman Catholic Church to their lay people. But we have also needed this other emphasis, which the Roman Catholic Church, I think, is going to make. That is to say that every man is called of God to perform the function in life that God has put him in the world to perform. And in that sense, he must feel an obligation as a layman to fulfill his call as much as a man who or a woman who has been called to the ministry feels their obligation to fulfill their call.
Bishop Corson, you have been very, very active in the church for many years. Have you felt any change in the relationship between the Catholic clergy and the Protestant clergy since the Second Vatican Council?
Oh, I think there's been a tremendous change. I think the atmosphere has changed a great deal. There's more freedom. There's more camaraderie. There's more sense of brotherhood, of working together. There's been a freer exchange of ideas between the Roman Catholic and the Protestant clergy. Already there have been many, many meetings when Roman Catholic clergy have met with Protestant and vice versa. And I think they worship together. And I think in that sense there's been a tremendous change in the atmosphere of our whole clergy life.
Would you say that the average man in the street has now gotten this feeling of oneness, of working together?
I feel certain that, of course, my knowledge is pretty largely confined to the United States. That is to say, while you travel in other countries, and I must do that as head of our World Methodist Church, the situation that you know most intimately is the one in which you live. And I would say that the laity have received very joyously this new relationship. This is typical. We had here a great ecumenical service. Archbishop Damiano of Camden, which is right across the river from Philadelphia, and I united in a great ecumenical service where we had nearly 3,000 people come. But this is what repeatedly Protestants said to me and Catholics said to Archbishop Damiano after the service. They said, now, my neighbor is a Catholic or my neighbor is a Protestant. We've been doing everything together except going to church. and this is the first time we've ever been able to go to church together.
Our guest tonight, the Reverend Bishop Fred P. Corson. Our topic, the effects of the Second Vatican Council on Protestantism in the U.S. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Self-sufficient, I made myself what I am, thank you.
But don't you think all of us occasionally could use a little divine or...
Gee, I gotta run. Here's my card, anyhow. I'm a vice president now.
Well, good.
Yes, indeed.
But your name, it's just penciled in here.
Well, there's a big turnover in personnel. You know how it is.
Uh-huh. Well, that's just about how it is in life, isn't it?
Pardon?
We're all just penciled in.
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him? It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church. This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest tonight, the Reverend Bishop Fred P. Corson. Our topic, the effects of the Second Vatican Council on Protestantism in the U.S. And if you'd like to join us here on Night Call, our number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, you may dial us direct and talk direct to Bishop Corson. The number again is area code 313-846-6601. And if you wish, you may make that telephone call collect. You may reverse the charges. And remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. And our Night Call lines are open, so we invite you to join us here on Night Call. Bishop Corson, over the years, I understand that you've had a chance to have several audiences with Popes Pius, John, and Paul. Would you care to comment on the difference between these gentlemen?
Yes, I've had an unusual experience for a Protestant clergyman. I suspect that I have had more private audiences with more popes than any Protestant clergyman probably living or anyone who has been. I had a private audience with Pope Pius XII immediately at the close of the war. I had an hour-long private audience with Pope John. And then I've had three lengthy private audiences with Pope Paul. And, of course, each of these men has been a different type of person. All of them have been superior men in their own right. And in each instance, we did discuss the things that had to do with both Protestant and Catholic religious life. And in that sense, I... count myself fortunate to have had the privilege of coming to know these men firsthand.
Now, you are head of the Methodist World Council. This means that you are very high in the hierarchy of the Protestant Church. How does the Pope address you?
Well, of course, you know, the Vatican operates on a very strict protocol, and I have had these audiences because I, too, am the head of a world church. And therefore, I have had that privilege of, and also that duty and responsibility of calling upon the Pope when I'm in Rome and of paying my respect. And the Popes, as you would expect, they're men, and they differ greatly according to their own personality. Certainly, each of the popes in no way embarrassed me because I was a Protestant. Each one of them rose and offered me his hand, whereas the Roman Catholic would have knelt and kissed the Pope's ring in loyalty to him. All of them received me most courteously, and our conversation was not a stilted one, but a very free one about vital interests, oftentimes personal, but always about the welfare of mankind and what we could do together in order to make a better world in which we could live and better people to live in it.
Would you say that John was tremendously different from Paul?
Oh, I think John was tremendously different probably from any person who ever sat on the throne of St. Peter. Really, he was a very unique man. Nobody expected him at his age to do very much. He was supposed to be a kind of a caretaker of the papacy until College of Cardinals would elect a younger man who would have the prospect of a longer period as Pope. But he gave evidence at once first that he had thought a great deal about the church and what was needed by the church. And of course, his vitality, his personality, his openness, his friendliness, his sincerity, the trust that he elicited. Without Pope John, we never could have had either the Second Vatican Council or this new atmosphere among all Christians in the world and non-Catholic bodies likewise, which has developed.
Well, what was that charm of Pope John that seemed to... Previous to Pope John, we used to think in terms of Pius as being a very intellectual and somewhat an aloof gentleman.
Yes, Pope Pius was an intellectual man, a very courteous person, a man who was a gentleman in every respect, and in whose presence it was a real stimulus to be because he spoke English, and our conversation with him was entirely in English. He did not use an interpreter while I was with him, and he was a world student, you know. He'd lived in America for a long time.
This was Pope Pius?
Pope Pius, yes.
I hadn't realized that he lived in the United States.
He was his own Secretary of State. You can see the scope of his knowledge of world affairs, and it was really a great experience just to talk to him about world matters. Now, of course, John was one of those Italians who was very outgiving in his personality. And everyone felt at home with him, the most intellectual, because he really was a great historian, you know. He just completed, during his cardinalate, a five-volume history of the church in northern Italy. And that sometimes is a factor about John that's overlooked because these other factors of his, the personality factors, the public relations factors, overshadowed his intellectual achievements. But even a little child or the humblest person or the most distinguished and outstanding man, anybody felt at home with Pope John. You never took any liberties with him, of course. He was a man who had his quiet dignity, too, but he was just one of those lovable men that opened his heart and his arms, and at once you felt that you were in the presence of a person not only who had an interest in you, but somehow had known you for a long time, and there was no sense of strain and no sense of aloofness when you were with him. It was just a very happy and joyous time, and I shall always look on that hour, and that was a very long private audience, toward the end of a day in which a man much younger than Pope John would have been completely exhausted to have had to go through. We sat and talked about a lot of things together, and for me, it was one of the greatest experiences of my life.
Well, Bishop Person, did you find that your conversations with the popes have always been on a very, how shall I say, honest dealing level in the sense of saying through the Pope, well, these are some of the things that possibly bother some Protestants about Catholicism in the United States. And maybe there's some things that Protestants do that bother the Catholic Church. Do you discuss this type of thing?
Yes, I think that you've described accurately the audiences that I have had with these three men. Of course, Paul is a different man from either Pius or John, but he himself is a very sincere man. He's a modest man and, in a way, a shy man. A man of great ability, though. I think he's one of the greatest tacticians that has ever lived. Had he been in the military, he certainly would have been not only the commanding general, but he would have been marshal of the armies because of his great tactical ability. A man who is eager to learn because he knows that only by gathering all the facts can he govern the church in the way it should be done and plot its course of progress and the fulfillment of its mission. And I was impressed the first time. You see, I saw him first right after he had been enthroned as the Pope. And he wasn't completely and thoroughly at home with his office as he is now, for he's superbly at home with it now. And he expressed it at once an appreciation that I had come to see him and that he was eager to talk to me, and he was anxious to know about the Methodist Church and about the reaction of the Protestant world to what was going on in the Second Vatican Council. He encouraged me to express my own views and, of course, in a very courteous and understanding way, to exchange with him points of view which had to be reconciled to bring us closer together. Yes, I've always had great freedom to do that with the Pope.
Do you feel that Pope Paul's recent visit to the UN was for the purpose of enhancing the papacy, or was it possibly motivated strictly on an appeal for peace basis?
I'm very sure that the motivation of which brought Paul to the United Nations was solely in the interest of peace. He believes that the promotion of peace is a Christian duty. He believes the church should be an instrument to bring about peace in the world. He believes profoundly that peace essentially is destroyed by man's spirit and the evil there is in the world. And I'm very sure that while, of course, the way in which he conducted himself and the events as they developed did add to his stature a great deal and did increase the influence of the church because of the impression that both Paul and gave of himself and of his church, I think that the real motivation of his coming was that in this hour when the world might blow up, the church ought to have a voice, it ought to speak, and I think he came to, if I may use the phrase, to quicken the conscience of these world leaders in the field of government and politics to the religious obligation, whatever their religion might be, to work solely not for a play of power politics, but for real peace in the world.
Our guest tonight, the Reverend Bishop Fred P. Corson. Our topic, the effects of the Second Vatican Council on Protestantism in the U.S. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Well, I can't this Sunday. I'm playing golf, and the following Sunday I promise to take the kids to the beach.
Uh-huh.
Man's got to spend some time with his kids, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Besides, we seem to get along just fine without church. You know, it's up to the individual. Gee, look at the time. I got to run. But anyhow, we'll trot along to church one of these days.
Uh-huh. Well, how about 2 weeks from Sunday?
Oh, I never planned that far ahead. 2 weeks, the whole world could blow up by then.
That's right.
Where you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb?
It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, Night People. Our guest, Bishop Fred P. Corson. Our topic, the effects of the Second Vatican Council on Protestantism in the U.S. And Bishop Corson has recently returned from the Second Vatican Council and has many things to tell us about it. If you'd like to ask a question of the bishop or make a comment on the effects of the Second Vatican Council on Protestantism in the U.S., give us a call here at Night Call. Our number is area code 313-846-6601. Now, you may dial us direct. And if you wish, you may make that call collect. You may reverse the charges. Our Night Call number, area code 313-846-6601. Now, we'd like to know what you think about the Second Vatican Council. How do you think it's going to affect Protestantism in the U.S.? If you have a comment, call us here at Night Call. Bishop Corson, do you feel that the Second Vatican Council will have the effect of bringing Protestantism and Catholicism together in the United States?
Well, certainly I think it has already brought us much closer together in spirit. I think we've got to make a clear distinction between the kind of unity that unites us in spirit, that recognizes one another's Christian experience, and the kind that really centers in one form of church government, of ecclesiastical government. I do not think that we are moving very rapidly toward one great church with only one kind of government and everybody adhering to it. I do think we're moving much more rapidly toward the recognition of the various denominations and of their validity so far as the expression of their Christianity is concerned. You see, the very fact that now we don't use the term heretic anymore, that probably never will be used again, and we're all happy about that. We call each other separated brethren, that is to say, we are essentially and at heart brothers, but our ways of expressing our religion have separated us. And some very definite pronouncements have been made which have recognized that while we are separated in that sense, we are all one in Christ. The early pronouncement which said that a person who was validly baptized, that is to say, baptized in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, even though it was not done by a Roman Catholic, was essentially a part of the organic body of Christ. Well, that laid the foundation for our unity in spirit, and it paved the way to many of the decisions which have been made since then that have enhanced our unity, brought us closer together. I would say that very definitely we've made great advances in the unity of our spirit. These other matters that have to do with forms of church government, they'll have to wait for another generation or two, I think, before they really will be discussed. It may be not a good thing for all of us to be under one umbrella, so to speak. I do think, though, that we will all be closely associated in some way, so that when we speak, we will speak as a unit, and when we move forward, we will move forward as a unit.
Bishop Corson, I have a caller in Indianapolis, Indiana, a listener on WFBM. This is Mary Holman. Good evening, Mary. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, ma'am.
Oh, thank you. I wanted you to know someone before, please.
Oh, we know people are listening.
Well, they didn't. You hadn't called in.
All right.
I think for me to have taken this position I take. I come from primitive or fundamentalist Baptist heritage. In that, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, and you go on back, and my mother's brothers and so forth have been that. But I believe this, that we have certain things in common. But as you said, I don't think we'll ever walk completely under the same umbrella. But I think we can walk together. And I think the time has come when we better decide whether or not we believe in something or don't. Now, I'd like the bishop's comment, please.
Bishop Carson?
Well, I think essentially your position is one which is pretty largely accepted today. I think it isn't important that we should decide that we're all going to have a Methodist form of government or the Presbyterian or the Episcopal or some other. I think it's much more important that we shall learn how to walk together with our blessed Lord, and what a joy it is when we do that. You may be interested to know that among the other questions that Pope John asked me when I was with him was this question: how long do you think it will be before all of us are together? And it was, of course, a question that was pretty hard to answer, and I said, well, we've been apart for 500 years, and it may take a couple of centuries before this matter of whether or not we are all going to be in one church again will be an issue that can be settled. And then he turned and he said to me, well, that's probably so, but he said, in your heart and my heart together, we have already achieved it. And I think that is the true spirit of unity, and I think that is the spirit in which all of us, though we bear a different denominational title, can walk together.
Mary, do you find that your opinion of the Catholic Church has changed since the Second Vatican Council?
Well, I would have to say no to that because I had made it a point to bring up on my own what I could know about it. Because I had very good friends who were Catholic. And I also know that these very same friends, at a time when I needed them most, that I would light a candle and say a prayer for you. All right, now then, who is to say that I could be talking to you tonight? This prayer, or maybe it was it all of them. Now you answer me that one.
Well, I will let the bishop answer that one.
No, I didn't really get all that Mary said, so you better repeat it, Russ.
Mary, do you want to repeat that for us?
Well, I said I knew before this second council, ecumenical council, that I had made up my mind because I had made it my business to find out what I could about the Catholic faith, which differed from Protestant.
So you had done some research previous?
Yes. And I had so many good Catholic friends. But there was a time when my Catholic friends came and said they would light a candle and say a prayer for me. All right, I wouldn't be talking tonight. If, who was to say whether it was one prayer or a combination?
A prayer's helped you.
Well, let's just say, even the doctors didn't think I would survive.
Well, Bishop Corson, do you want to comment on that?
Well, I would only say that the prayer that I quote the scripture which says the prayers of a righteous man availeth much, and therefore we don't know, and in the providence of God, we are not to know just how some of these things work out, but we do know that marvelous things are wrought by prayer, and that if a man is righteous, he can talk with God, and therefore I welcome the prayers of all people. The fact of the matter is, I'm very sure that I couldn't do what I do if I did not have the prayers of all people. In these 86 different countries where the Methodist Church is at work, and among all denominations. And I think one of the things that moved me most was the very sincere request on the part of all three of these popes when I've been with him that I ask my people to pray for him. And in that way, it's when we can pray together, we're pretty close.
Mary, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
I just give you something to talk about in case you don't have other calls.
Well, thank you for calling. Good night. Miss Mary Holman from Indianapolis, Indiana, listener on WFBM. And Bishop, I have a caller in Denver, Colorado, listener on KTLN, Mr. Roosevelt Miller. Good evening, Roosevelt. Speak right up, sir. You're on Night Call.
Yes. How are you this evening?
Real fine, Roosevelt.
I would like to mention something about Christianity. You know, in society,
can you speak up a little bit, Roosevelt,
not
please?
It's coming through very clear to me.
I'd like to get his definition of a Christian.
All right. Bishop Corson, what's your definition of a Christian?
Well, I think a Christian, to give a very short definition, and therefore it would be an inadequate one from the standpoint of a theologian, but I think a Christian is a person who's trying his best to commit his life wholly to the way that Christ lives, and to be wholly and completely loyal in every way to him. I think that is essentially what a Christian is.
Well, one reason why I ask you to define that, because that relates to my question. I would like to know why that religion, why is it so that different races are separated? Why, I mean, we're thinking of uniting churches together. Well, don't you think at the same time that we should concentrate on uniting races and different nationalities?
I didn't get that, Russ. It wasn't coming from
Roosevelt me. Is asking whether or not the races of man shouldn't also be united, that we concentrate our efforts in bringing the religions and the nations together. What about the races of the world together?
Well, the races of the world are moving closer together. There's a lot that needs to be done, but we mustn't forget that we've come a long way in that respect. And while man is man, and man is tainted with sin, he's not perfect, and we always have evil people among us, and we've always got to fight that. But nevertheless, we ought to thank God first for how far we've come in this matter of bringing races together and having a mutual respect for them and giving them opportunities. And then we ought to pledge ourselves, as Jesus did, if we follow him, that we shall work very hard in order to bring it to pass. Of course, we have to deal with other people, but at the same time, we are obligated to bear our own witness wherever we are, regardless of what others around us do.
One more thing I'd like to add. Is this a custom that different races tend to stay to their own denomination? I mean, is this a custom, or should it not be this way? I mean, I'd like to know.
No, I couldn't hear that either, Russ.
Roosevelt wants to know whether or not different races tend to stick to certain religions. Is this a custom, or is this something that seems to be native to races?
Well, I wouldn't know how to answer that. Of course, the various races of the world and the various cultures of the world have had their own approaches to God, and we learn a lot from all those who sincerely have tried to find God and his meaning for life. Our religious faith is made up of a contribution from all of these people. I think there are times when one's personality very largely determines the kind of religion that he will follow. But I think that probably
have to take our station break now, so I'll thank Roosevelt for calling. Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Thank you, sir.
Having you on Night Call. Mr. Roosevelt Miller from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN.
Our guest tonight is Bishop Fred P. Corson. Our topic, the effects of the Second Vatican Council on Protestantism in the U.S. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Busy America, busy America, busy making money, busy buying gadgets, busy keeping up with the you-know-who.
Is that your idea of fulfillment? Don't you wonder if there's more to life than just that rat race with no finish line?
Where'd you get the idea you could make it all by yourself? Doesn't it get a little lonely sometimes out on that limb without him?
It's a great life, but it could be greater. Why try and go it alone? The blessings you lose may be your own.
The preceding was presented by the United Presbyterian Church.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our Night Call topic tonight, the effects of the Second Vatican Council on Protestantism in the U.S. Our guest, the Reverend Bishop Fred P. Corson, and he, of course, is the president of the Million-Member World Methodist Council. If you'd like to ask Bishop Corson a question or make a comment, call us here at Night Call. Our number is area code 313-846-6601. Now remember, you may call from anywhere collect. Now please make that call station to station. The number here at Night Call is area code 313-846-6601. And our Night Call lines are now open and our operators are on duty, and we invite you to join us here on Night Call. If you get a busy signal, don't become discouraged. Just hang up and dial again. And Bishop Corson, I have a caller standing by in Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Mr. Stanley Kosky. Hello, Stanley. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
Good evening.
Yes, sir.
I've got a question to ask the good bishop.
Yes.
Are the Protestant churches planning any similar council as the Second Vatican Council that the Catholic churches have had?
Well, as you may know, Stanley, the Protestant churches have been meeting once every 6 years in the sessions of the World Council of Churches. And while the purpose of the Second Vatican Council is somewhat different from that of the World Council of Churches, nevertheless, all these matters of our common faith and of our common challenge of the world to that faith, all of them do come before the World Council of Churches. Now, also, what we call the world confessional bodies, that is, a world body like the Methodist Church that I represent, it has an organization. Our organization meets as a body once every 5 years, but through secretaries and through committees and various groups of that sort, we're constantly working all the time. And then, too, this other factor is entered in, which I know you'll be interested in. All of these bodies have now or are in the process of setting up continuing committees so that they will be discussing with Roman Catholic committees these matters of faith and of life and of work and how we can come to a common understanding about them and how we can unite our forces and work together to bring to pass the position which we hold in common as Christians. And also as not only as Christians, but with many of the non-Christian groups. What we hold in common, that's the thing that we ought to together testify to and work for. And in that sense, I think that the continuing movement of unity and of a united expression for the things that we believe are the spiritual values of life, is now having and will have a greater hearing than they have in the past.
Stanley, I want to thank you for calling Night Call.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Stanley Kosky from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLM. And, Doctor, we have another caller standing by in Lafayette, Indiana, a listener on WFBM, Mr. Dale Rothenberger. Good evening, Dale. Speak right up. You're on Night Call, sir.
I would like to ask Bishop Corson what he feels will be the effect of the Vatican Council on the interfaith marriage.
Bishop?
Well, I have just written an article on that, largely taken from a Catholic journal called The Commonweal, which you may know is a liberal Catholic journal. And I think that most of us are hoping that eventually the position of the Roman Catholic Church on marriage, especially on mixed marriages, will be largely the one that prevailed up until about the 12th century.
And what was that?
Well, it was the recognition of marriage, wherever it was performed, if it was performed in a legal way. In other words, a civil marriage was recognized if it was done in the proper way. And I think that is the position toward which, certainly toward which the Protestants hope that the Roman Catholic Church will move again. And there are many within the Roman Catholic Church who feel that that these rules that have to do with mixed marriages in the end do not accomplish what the Church must by its very necessity protect, that is, its own Christian position on marriage and family life, and there will be there a greater freedom which will come out of one spirit as they live together and love each other and build their family together. Now, we're a long way from accomplishing that at the present time, although I think that the first steps have been made by the recent statement of the Pope, which does give some measure of participation so far as Protestant clergy are concerned in marriages that are mixed and, however, are performed by the Roman Catholic Church. But that's the way these things have to start. You have to start and take them one step at a time. And while the ideal certainly has not yet been arrived at, we believe that if we sincerely and conscientiously work together, in the end, some of these problems that have concerned us very greatly, both Catholics and Protestants, that had to do with mixed marriages, will be solved.
Dale?
Yes?
Do you feel that this question has caused a lot of consternation on the part of Protestants as far as getting the churches together and unity and working together?
Pardon?
Do you feel that this mixed marriage problem has caused a lot of problems with the relationship between the faiths?
Do I feel?
Yes.
I think it very definitely has. I feel that the strong stand that the Catholic Church takes on the issue forces the participants in the mixed marriage or the interfaith marriage to break the rules. They're not so that they really can be accepted by a Protestant. In good faith, he would almost have to become a Catholic, the way I understand it. I would like to question the bishop on when he thinks this end will come, this end that he speaks of. When can we expect some relaxation? Is this going to be another 400 years, or will it be in the immediate future, or what?
Well, of course, you can't tell. You can't tell for the very reason that 6 years ago, no one would ever have dreamed that we could have had a Second Vatican Council, that the Protestant observers could have been brought into it as we've been brought in, that we could have interfaith meetings with Roman Catholics and Protestants. I mean by that, sometimes these things come very quickly because we aren't conscious of the groundswell that's under them. And I think it's an honest answer to say that we don't know how long it will take. And then, of course, is something that has to do with the providence of God in these matters. I think that the Second Vatican Council was providential. I think that Pope John was God's man for the hour. We had to have a man like him or it couldn't have happened. And I think what we can do is try to understand each other and work together and keep our relationships on a level where we can work together until we can come to a common understanding. I wish I had now here the summary of this article that I referred to that appeared in this Catholic magazine, The Commonweal. But if you are really interested in it, and will write to the Commonweal magazine, I'm sure that they will send you the statement that they made on this matter of mixed marriages, and you really ought to get it because you're interested in this subject, and it will give you at least the point of view of many, many Roman Catholics concerning it.
Dale, I want to thank you. Thank you for calling Night Call, Dale.
You're welcome.
Mr. Dale Rothenberger from Lafayette, Indiana, the home of Purdue University, listener on WFBM. Bishop Corson, in less than a minute, can you tell us or summarize what you think will be the biggest effect of the Second Vatican Council on Protestantism in the U.S.?
I think the biggest single effect will be that from now on, in many areas where we have attempted to speak and work separately that have to do with human welfare and the betterment of mankind, we shall now have a united voice and a united effort and a greatly increased strength and influence.
And this forebodes well for the Church and Christianity, then?
Yes, I think it's a new day, and a day that ought to give us some optimistic hope about the influence of the right things on the future of society.
Reverend Bishop Fred P. Corson, I want to thank you for being our guest on Night Call. We've enjoyed having you here.
This is a good hour, and I'm glad that we've had this privilege of talking religion to so many people.
Good night, Bishop.
Good night.
Bishop Fred P. Corson was our guest tonight. Our topic was the effect of the Second Vatican Council on Protestantism in the U.S. Monday night, we take a look at the United Nations on Night Call. Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station as a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.